We're holding at the first Mishnah on Memches Amud Aleph. We learned at the beginning of the Perek, the first Mishnah and the Perek had listed the number of days where different dinim apply during Sukkot. We said, starting off Lulav and Arava, sometimes it's 6 or 7 days. The next one was a Halva Simcha Shmoina, that Halal and Simcha both are for all 8 days. So our Mishnah says, Halva Simcha Shmoina Ketza. What does that mean? Melamed, from this we learn, Shechayev Adam, Bahalal of a Simcha, Vachvayd Yom Tov, Achon Shechag, that a person is Chayev to say Halal and to have Simcha and to honor the last day of Yom Tov, meaning Shmini Atzeres, Keshav Kol Yomei Sechag, just like all the other days of Sukkot. We said yesterday that Shmini Atzeres is considered a Yom Tov of its own. It's still, even though the other dinim of Sukkot don't apply to it, you don't sit in the Sukkah in Eretz Yisrael, you don't take Lulav and Esrog anywhere, but you still say Halal and you still have Simcha and you still have to honor it like any other Yom Tov. How do we know this? That we have specifically what we're asking is, how do we know that you have to have Simcha on Shmini Atzeres? Sukkot, the pasuk says, it doesn't say anything about, and in fact we call Sukkot Man Simchasenu. Shmini Atzeres, it doesn't actually say anywhere in the pasuk that you have to have Simcha on it.
Is any Yom Tov on a Simcha?
It is, but actually if you look at the descriptions in the Pesukim, in Parashas Re'eh, which is where the mitzvah of Simcha is mentioned, by Pesach it doesn't mention Simcha at all. Shavuos it only mentions it once. Sukkot it mentions it three times. Shmini Atzeres it actually doesn't discuss in that particular parasha at all. It only discusses Shmini Atzeres in other places where the Torah goes through all the other Yom Tovim, because mainly in Parashas Re'eh, the focus is on Aliyah L'Regel. And once you've done Aliyah L'Regel during Sukkot, you don't need to do it again during Shmini Atzeres. But nevertheless, we actually don't have a pasuk that says in so many words that specifically Shmini Atzeres. So how do we know? The Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, when the pasuk says Val Yisach Sameach, you should be only happy, which is talking about Sukkot. L'Rabbis Leili Yom Tov Achron, it comes to include the last day. It comes to include the last night of Yom Tov. Now, Oy Eina El Yom Tov Edition.
We know
it has to include something.
Right.
We know it has to include something. Now, actually, there's a famous question on this. Usually we say that the word ach comes to exclude.
Yeah.
For example, we had back in Sachem that ach, by Yom Rishon, Tashvitz Tzara, tells us that only half the day.
Right.
So there's a famous verse, they say, I believe, from the Vilna Gaon, that says that the reason why we say it refers to Shmini Atzeres, I mean, the Gemara is going to go through the possibilities, but and the Gemara is going to say that, in fact, ach means cholach, but the idea is, during the rest of Sukkot, you have many mitzvahs. You have Lulav and Esrog, you have the Sukkah, and you have Simcha. Shmini Atzeres, the other ones are gone. You don't have Sukkah, you don't have Lulav and Esrog. All you have, all that's left on that day is the mitzvah of Simcha. Simcha, the official definition of Simcha, right, as Rashi says, and on the Mishnah, is Shalmei Simcha, is eating the meat of Shlok.
You could see it in a different way. Although you don't have the Sukkah, you don't have the Esrog, you don't have anything else.
So, how do you know? Maybe the word Yisach Sameach comes to include that you need to have Simcha the first night of Yom Tov. No, Shu'ayma, Ach Cholach. But when it says Ach, then it comes to exclude. So on the one hand, Yisach Sameach is telling you that there's an extra amount of Simcha that you have to have. And on the other hand, Ach is telling you to exclude something. So we're saying that it means Ach comes to exclude the first night. You don't yet have the mitzvah of Simcha then. And Val Yisrael Sameach comes to include the last night, meaning Shmini Atzeres. So Umara Yisrael Rabbis Leila Yom Tov Achron Allah Yisrael Leila Yom Tov Edition. What's the logic that you're saying that you would assume that it includes Shmini Atzeres night and take out the first night? Marba Leila Yom Tov Achron. The reason is we're Marba the last night of Yom Tov. She yesh Simcha Lefanov because there is Simcha before it. As opposed to we're excluding the first night of Yom Tov, there's no Simcha before it. Meaning, so one way of looking at it is like you said, Ruben, that given that the Simcha is Shalmei Simcha, so if you saw on the first night, you don't yet have Kavanas, you don't yet have Shalmei Simcha, well you might bring Kavanas out of Yom Tov, but the mitzvah of Simcha is not yet Chal. Not necessarily would you even be able to say. I mean, maybe you are supposed to bring Karbanos Erev Yom Tov, but you can't say that you're being yotze to the mitzvah of Simcha through that necessarily, because not the Zman of Simcha yet. So therefore, that night, you don't have any charm with Simcha to eat.
I mean, you can say the day starts at night. I mean, what is included during the day starts at night.
Yeah, but the point is, you don't have Shalmei Simcha. If you're saying that you have to shecht Shalmei Simcha at the time when the mitzvah of Simcha is chal, well, then Erev Yom Tov, the mitzvah has not yet been chal. So therefore, it's logical to say that the mitzvah of Simcha does not include the first night, as opposed to Shmini Atzeres night. You can have korbanos that you shechted on Hoshana Rabbah on the seventh day. The Korban Pesach is not a matter of Simcha, though. That's with the Korban Pesach, you brought a special shlomim, but we learned about that in Sachem. That wasn't a shlomim for the sake of Simcha. That was a shlomim for the sake of that you can eat the Pesach ala sova, that you can eat the Pesach with a full feeling. You do have a separate, no, that's not necessarily Simcha. You do have a separate mitzvah to bring a Shalmei Simcha on Tetzvav Nissan, on the first day of Pesach. And that's the one where the same thing as with Sukkot. If you didn't bring it the first day Pesach, then you have all the Pesach to bring it. Similarly with Sukkot. If you didn't bring your Shalmei Simcha the first day, you can bring it the second day, the third day, etc., all the way until and including Shmini Atzeres. So that's one way of looking at it. Other Mepharshim just say more down to earth, kind of, that once, it's more logical to assume once you have Simcha already that the Pesach is telling you to continue it, rather than saying that you should, rather to say that you should start it earlier than you might have expected, that you need a special liver for. So therefore, it's more logical to say that Ayisa, Ach Sameach, comes to tell us, continue the Simcha that you had from Sukkot into Shemini Atzeres, since you already have Simcha, as opposed to say that you should have to start at a certain time. That, is that since we have the word Ach, it's more logical that it's excluding the beginning than the end. Mishnah says, Sukkah Shiva Ketzah, the next thing the Mishnah had said again at the beginning of the Perek, the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek had gone like this. Lulav Arava are sometimes 6, sometimes 7 days, depending whether one of the days comes out on Shabbos. Sukkah, Halal Vasimcha, we said are Shemoina, both are for 8 days, and we just said what that means, that you say Halal and you have Simcha for all 8 days. Then the Mishnah, the next thing had been Sukkah, and Nitzach HaMayim Shiva, the Mitzvah of Sukkah, and Nitzach HaMayim are for 7 days, no matter what. So now the Mishnah is going to deal with those. Sukkah Shiva Kates, what does it mean that the mitzvah of Sukkah is for all 7 days? Gomer Milech, it means when a person has finished eating his meal on the seventh day, on his main meal of the day, on the seventh day of Sukkah, on Hoshana Rabbah, lo yakir sukkah, so he should not take down his sukkah, because even though theoretically he doesn't need it anymore that day, but the fact is you do. If you plan to eat any, if you end up eating any more that day, you will have to eat in the sukkah. If you still want to sleep, you will have to sleep in the sukkah. So therefore, don't take it down. That's what we mean rather than the mitzvah. The sukkah lasts for all 7 days. And in fact, some of the Farshim say that actually the Mishnah doesn't just mean like Rashi is saying as a practical matter, keep it. It means don't take it down. No, it means also don't take it down because it would be a bizoyan for the mitzvah to take it down when it's still needed.
Yeah. The design also could be you don't tear it down, but you don't use it at all.
No, not necessarily, but yeah. But from Mincha time and on, this is, well, again, we're talking about Hoshana Rabbah, so you're coming close to Shmini Atzeres, when you're going to be eating inside. So from Mincha time and on, you can bring in your kelim, bring in your utensils inside from the sukkah. Murdered means to take them down, because we mentioned a few times in the Masechta, usually in those days, they built their sukkahs on their roofs. So the standard term that the Gemara uses for bringing things into the sukkah is malin, and for taking them out is meridin. What? Right. Halu masukkah, for example, we had right by Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. Yeah, so you're murid as a kelim mina mincha l'mail. You can bring down the kelim from mincha time onward. For the sake of the covenant of the last day of Yom Tov, this way, like you're preparing in advance. It's not just you wait until nightfall and then all of a sudden you start scrambling around to get everything ready. Yes, so we'll talk about in the Gemara what we do in Chutzlaret. So first of all, the Gemara asks, Ein lo kelim lahodid mahu, what if you don't have any kelim to bring inside? What do you mean if you don't have any kelim? Ein lo kelim alaki yishtamash ma yishtamash, so what do you use in the sukkah these 7 days? Ella, ein le mokum laherded kelim mahu. Rather, the question is, what if you don't have any place to bring your kelim into? So you don't have, your house is not available. You don't have a house, let's say, or, you know, your house is not available for whatever reason. Now, the problem is, if you leave your kelim in the sukkah, fine, you're eating in the sukkah, let's say, because you have no choice. But the fact is, you still have an issue that it looks like you're being moitzif ala mitzvah. We talked about yesterday the issue of it's not really baltoisif to eat on Shmini Atzeres in the sukkah because it's not the zman of sukkah, but at least it looks like baltoisif. You want to at least show that you're not deliberately eating there for the sake of trying to do the mitzvah an extra day, but rather you're eating there because you have no choice. What do? So Rav Chia Bar Rav, or Chia Bar Ashi, it says on the side, Amar, Poichus Bar Abba. What you do is, you take down four tefachim width of the schach. We learned back in the first Perek that Tzvi Tvachim of empty space in the Sukkah passels the Sukkah already. So here you're taking off four Tvachim, which makes the Sukkah passels. And then that way, you're demonstrating, I'm only eating over here because I don't have any place else to eat, not because I want to be b'chaim in the mitzvah. No, because you're doing it for the sake of that you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. Right, so Tosfos asks the question, I mean, if three Tvachim are enough to pass all the Sukkah, why do you need to take all four Tvachim? So some of Farshim say the answer is just because four Tvachim is a more visible thing. You take off three Tvachim, it's not necessarily so noticeable. You take off four, then it's more noticeable. Right. Others of them also point out that four Tvachim is most of the size of a person. A person's head and most of his body takes up about six Tvachim. So this way, most of his head and body is under the sky as opposed to under the sky. And then another possibility some of them bring up is that in general, just the opposite. A person is sitting in the sukkah. He's not going to just going to want to sit under the open air. He's going to want to sit under something. If a person takes off the sukkah, what's he going to do? He's going to replace it with something possible. He'll replace it with a sheet of plastic or something. Well, we learned in the first parak that the amount of possible sukkah that possible sukkah is four tefachim. If you cover it with something, then you get into the issue that we had in the first parak. Are you covering it to protect yourself from the sun? Then taka would passel the sukkah versus are you doing it for the decoration of the sukkah? So it's not so just put a cover over it. It's not so obvious that you're demonstrating that it's possel. Whereas if you actually take off some of the schach and replace it with possel schach, then it makes it more obvious. And then again, schach possel, you need four tefachim. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says no. What you do is you light a candle in there. We learned it towards the end of the second parak that there were rules about what kind of kalim you are and are not supposed to have in the sukkah. One of them were that a lamp is not supposed to be inside the sukkah. We said in the case of a small sukkah, you're not supposed to have a lamp in there. We talked about a couple of possibilities. It wasn't so simple necessarily that it was talking about a small sukkah. We had over there the different possibilities. Either that we are talking about a sukkah that is barely 7 by 7 tefachim. So therefore, if you have a candle, if you have a lamp in there, either it's mamayat the shear, it makes it effectively you have less than 7 by 7 tefachim space to sit in, so therefore passels it on those grounds, or that you wouldn't have a candle in there because you're afraid of lighting the sukkah on fire. You're afraid of burning it down. Or the other possibility we talked about is that we're talking about specifically an earthenware lamp where once you light it, it becomes filthy and disgusting, and it's a bizarre to have such a thing in a sukkah. So what you do here is, on the contrary, according to Rabbi Yisrael ben Levi, okay, light a lamp in the sukkah, according to any of these various reasons, whichever reason applies, you're demonstrating, therefore, that you're not considering it a sukkah anymore. We talked about there, that's the thing. First of all, according to the way of looking at it, that it's mamayat the size of the sukkah, or that you might light the sukkah on fire, then it only applies to a sukkah that's barely 7 by 7. It doesn't apply to the larger sukkahs that we use. And if we talk about that it's cheres, we don't use earthenware lamps nowadays. We use metal candlesticks. Yeah. Again, only if it's a bare 7 by 7 tefachim. Oh, so you're talking about the one on Shmini Atzeres, right? So, right. Yeah. Okay. So then you do it carefully. But the point is, usually during the seven days of Sukkot, you wouldn't do it because you're afraid of burning. According to that explanation, so you're afraid of burning down the sukkah. So therefore, now go ahead and bring it in, and just of course be careful, you know. But that's what we're saying on Shmini Atzeres. If you have no choice but to eat in your sukkah, then do that in order to demonstrate that you're not treating it like a regular sukkah, right?
But we use it all 7 days in it.
That's what I'm saying. We do, because ideally you are supposed to have the neiris where you eat. We have larger sukkahs, so we're not worried about burning down our sukkahs. We're not worried about that we're going to use up some of the space, so we won't have 7 by 7, and we don't have earthenware candlesticks, so none of that applies, right? And the Gemara points out, it's actually not a machlokas. When we had Rav Chiya bar Ashi versus Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, where one of them says you take down some of the schach and the other one says you bring in a lamp, it's actually not a machlokas. Halan v'halahu. One is for us in Babel, the other one is for them in Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, there was an interesting Tosfos a few days ago that pointed out many times we find in the Gemara that the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael tended to have Talmidim from Babel, and vice versa. Because heavy goyel l'machon Torah. People from Babel wouldn't just stay in Babel to learn over there. They'd come to Eretz Yisrael to learn, and vice versa. So Rav Chiya bar Ashi, who's in Babel, had a lot of talmidim from Eretz Yisrael. He's speaking to them. Therefore, they are able to take down some of their schach because they don't need the sukkah at all on Shmini Atzeres. Mashenkin, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, talking to Talmudim from Babel, they have to keep an 8th day, as we said, you have to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, because Suffolk, it might be the 7th day. So you can't take down 4 tefachim of Yitzchak, you still need to sit in there, because it's Suffolk, Sveikah D'Yemah. So therefore, the only thing you can do is bring in a lamp over there. That's one way of looking at it. And then the other explanation that some Rishonim explain, I believe the Rif and others say, is that when we say Halon v'Halahu, it means both of them were talking about Shmini Atzeret. But the point is, rather, so we, in other words, what we're talking about is like this. So at the end of the time, we have to sit in the sukkah, which for Bnei Eretz Yisrael means the end of Hashana Rabba, and for us means the end of Shmini Atzeres. So on Hashana Rabba, it's a weekday, you can tear down some of the sukkah. So therefore, do that. We, Chutzniks, who have to sit in the sukkah, Shmini Atzeres, when it comes, suppose we have to, for whatever reason, eat in the sukkah, Simchas Torah, because we don't have a house to eat in. We can't tear down 4 tefachim of the sukkah. You can't do that on Yom Tov. So therefore, the only choice is bring in a lamp. So Gemara says, Hotenach sukkah kana. Okay, that idea of bringing in a lamp works in a small sukkah. Sukkah gdoyla ma'ikah l'meima. What do you do about a big sukkah? We just said that on a big sukkah, you do bring the lamp inside normally. The answer is, in that case, in that case, what you do in a large sukkah is bring in the dishes that you usually use for eating, the dirty dishes. Ma'ayo means to bring it. Money mechla, the utensils for eating. Da'amar rafa, because we learned back at the end of the second parak, money mechla bami v'tal alta, that the utensils for eating should stay outside the sukkah, meaning obviously you bring a plate of food in to the sukkah, but then when it's dirty, you take it out. Or we had some mafarshim over there who explained that actually the money mechla means things like pots and pans, which you never, during the year, you usually don't bring those to your table. You leave them in the kitchen and then bring the food to the table in plates and then in plates and bowls. So similarly over here, you leave the pots outside the sukkah. Here, fakir, when you're trying to demonstrate that the sukkah is no longer a sukkah, bring the pots inside. As opposed to the drinking utensils, stay in the sukkah, either because those don't get as dirty or because those you normally bring to the table anyway. So whatever it is that you don't bring to the table during the rest of sukkahs, here you doubt could do bring it to the table when you have to demonstrate that you're no longer using it as a sukkah. Then the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak had said that Nisuch HaMayim also takes place for 7 days. So Nisuch HaMayim Ketzad, the Mishnah says. How do they do Nisuch HaMayim? Shloiches Shel Zahav, a golden jug, Machzekes Shloisha Lugim, which held 3 lugim of water. A lug is about a pint, so you're talking about 3 pints, a little less than 1/2 gallon. They would fill up from the Shiloyach spring. The Shiloyach spring is it's a spring by the right. It's right near Yerushalayim. They used to also that was where they would anoint the Malka Bistah. Yes, now that was Yerushalayim's major water source. Yeah, it's still there. That's the famous one that Chizkiyahu stopped up and built the tunnel, the famous tunnel that they rediscovered 100 odd years ago. Yeah. So they'd fill up this thing from the Shiloyach. He gave a shot because ideally, as the Gemara is going to say, you're supposed to take the water for Nisuch HaMayim, you're supposed to take from a mayan, from a spring. If they couldn't, we'll talk about later in the Mishnah what happened. The Shiloyach is a spring, yeah.
But it's a spring that comes from underneath the Beis Hamikdash.
No, that's a different one. That's actually Yechezkel describes, we learned about it in Shkolim and also in Yoma, that when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a spring that starts out from underneath the Kodesh HaKadoshim and spreads out, it goes through the south gate, and we have the whole description over there, and it eventually spreads out to all the water, to all the waterways in the world and purifies them, but that's in Mashiach time. In the times, in nowadays, and in earlier times, the major spring of Yerushalayim was the Shiloyach. Yeah. So, Higiu l'shar ha'mayim, when they reached the shar ha'mayim, which actually we learned in those Gemaras there, that one reason, this gate, there were 2 reasons why this gate was called shar ha'mayim. It's one of the gates on the south side of the Azara. One reason is taka, because they brought the jug for Nisuch ha'mayim through that gate, which, you know, it makes sense. The Shiloyach is on the south side of Yerushalayim, so they'd walk up through the city and then come in through the south gate. And then the Gemara there had mentioned in Shkolim and in Yoma that the other reason it's called Shar HaMayim is because that through that gate, that trickle of water that comes from the Kodesh HaKadoshim will end up coming out in Mashiach's time. It's one of these gates on the side.
That's cool.
That's south. Right. Yeah. It's this gate, I think. Yeah. Shar HaMayim. So he deal the Shar HaMayim, when they reached the Shar HaMayim with the water, Taku Be'eriu V'Taku, they would blow a Tekiah through a Tekiah, again, like we had the other day in connection with the Aravos, as an expression of Simcha. Incidentally, I mean, the Mishnah is not going into over here the whole thing that they did before that. Every night they'd have simcha space to sheva. That we'll talk about in the next parak. But so it was a whole long thing. This that we're talking about, you know, it makes it sound like just the first thing they went down in the morning and filled up the water. Before that, there had been a whole evening and a whole night of celebration every night. Olava Kevesh, the kohen who's carrying the water, goes up the ramp of the mizbeach, upon the smoiler, and he turns to his left. Shnei svalim shel kesef hayusham. There were two silver basins there, two silver cups, like attached to the mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shel sidno. Your Rabbi Yehuda says no, they weren't made out of silver. They were made out of white plaster. So why did they look like silver? They look dark because of the wine. When you pour wine onto plaster, it darkens it. So therefore, it made it look silvery.
Like old silver.
Yeah. These two basins over there, these two cups that were built onto the mizbeach, had in them holes like two little chotmin. Chotmin literally means noses. Well, it can mean noses or it can mean nostrils. So Rashi and Tosfos discuss the details over here. According to Rashi, what it is like this. You have something like this. You have the cup. Underneath the cup, there's a little protrusion sticking out. You have the hole at the bottom of the cup that goes out into like a short tube that comes out from the bottom of the cup. The water, when you pour it into the cup, the wine also, when you pour it into the cup, it goes out that hole at the bottom of the cup. It goes through that little tube. It comes out onto the top of the mizbeach, and then from there it trickles down into the shavim. So you can see, like over here, you can see sort of here in the picture that according to Rashi, you'd have the water, the wine would go. You pour it into the seifo. It would trickle out the bottom of it. And you have like a little nozzle like sticking out from each of those svalim to a hole nearby in the mizbeach, which then it would flow down through those holes and down into the ground. Tosfos discusses a different possibility. I mean, what kind of logic is that you make it go onto the top of the mizbeach and only then trickle down into the holes? So therefore, Tosfos explains differently that on the contrary, the chotem was actually on the top, on the inside of the cup. So the hole doesn't get plugged up, sort of like you have in drains sometimes. You know, they have like the hole instead of being at the bottom where everything flows onto it. You have like a little nipple over there, and then the hole in the middle of it. So it doesn't get stopped.
Residues go down and
right.
Hole is up.
So exactly. Yeah. And then there's a third possibility. The Rambam does mention these shnei svalim, but the Rambam seems to talk about that the kohen would pour the wine directly into the wine and the water directly into the shittin. Some of them have a field day discussing how exactly the Rambam holds this whole thing works. Some of them want to say, in fact, that what the Rambam means is these two cups were not built onto the top of the mizbeach, like we're assuming, but rather they were built onto the base of the mizbeach. So the kohen would be standing on top and he's pouring downward into the cups. Anyway, the echad ma'uba the echad dak, of these two holes, well, this is according to Rashi, of the two holes in the two cups, one of them was thicker and one of them was a little thinner. Kadeshi Yoshneim called them the masakas in order that the water and the wine both drain out at the same time. Wine is thicker than water, so therefore the one for the wine had a bit of a wider hole so it'll drain out faster, and the one for the water had a narrower hole. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says that actually what we mean by thicker and thinner is the bottom of the cup itself, the bottom of the basin itself was thicker for the wine, was thinner, thicker for the wine, for the water one, and thinner for the wine one. Same idea, that this way the wine has a shorter distance to travel to actually drain out. Ma'arove shomayim mizracha shoyayin. The one on the west side, closer to the west side of the mizbeach, was for the water. The one on the east side, which is closer to where the kohen is standing, is for the wine. Ira shomayim b'serich shoyayin. What if the kohen poured the jug of water into the basin that was meant for the wine, v'shoyayin b'serich shomayim, or he poured the jug of wine that was meant for the nesachim? Remember, this is the wine is being poured, the water is being poured on the mizbeach while they're bringing the korban tavit. This all that we're describing in the Mishnah is taking place in the middle of the bringing of the Korban Tamid. Along with the Korban Tamid, as we say every day in Korbanot, they brought flour and oil for Mincha and wine for Nesachim. So here we're talking about that they'd be pouring the wine and the water at the same time onto the Mizbeach.
They just added the water to the regular Seder, what they just...
Right. That's why, for example, the Mishnah discusses in Yoma, for example, that normally on a regular day they needed 9 Kohanim to bring the Korban Tamid. 6 of them, we learned this in Yoma, 6 of them would be carrying the pieces of the Tamid, 1 would be carrying the Mincha, 1 would be carrying the wine, and 1 would be carrying the 5 actually would be carrying the pieces of the Korban, 1 the wine, 1 the flour, 1 the Mincha Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol, and 1 would be carrying the Kishkis of the animal. That's 9. And then on Sukkot, they had one more to carry the water. So if you poured the water into the basin that was meant for the wine, or the wine into the one for the water, so the fact is they both drain out into the same drain, so Gemara is going to talk about at great length about that drain tomorrow. The Rambam has a different explanation of this last piece of the Mishnah. The Rambam explains that what it means is actually, what if the Kohen was holding a jug of wine and a jug of water, what if he mixed the contents of two jugs together and then poured them into one of the basins? So he poured the wine into the water, or vice versa, the Dievid Yoytzeh. You're supposed to not do that. You're supposed to have the wine as wine and the water as water, but if you mix them, then Rabbi Huda says that no, you Tanakhama are saying they use a 3-lug jug of water. No, they only use 1-lug. And he did the Nisuch all 8 days. So he holds they did the Nisuch HaMayim not only the 7 days of Sukkot, but also on Shemini Atzeres. We'll learn in a few months, as a Shem and Tainus, there's more than those opinions as well. There's opinions that actually they only did the Nisuch HaMayim beginning from the 2nd day of Sukkot. We'll talk about it in a couple of months, Beth Hashem, later this summer. But yeah. The person who was doing the Nisuch HaMayim, they would tell him, Hag by Yadcha, lift up your hand, and would do like this, so everybody can see that you're actually pouring it where it's supposed to go. Famous story, because one time one of the Kohenim, who was a Tzaduki, poured it on his feet, because they don't believe in Nisuch HaMayim, because Talach HaMashim Sinai, or we learn it from Joshua's Pesukim, as the case may be, and they didn't believe in that concept. And all the people stoned him with their astrogin. Which the Yerushalmi actually says it wasn't just astrogin. We'll learn about this more in the Gemara as well tomorrow. The Yerushalmi says they pelted him with stones as well and actually killed him. Which actually there's an interesting, it's kind of interesting, the various things. I'll tell you, there's an interesting thing that Ben Yehoyada writes about this in his Sefer Ben Yahu, that actually what happened, the people, apparently, according to him, I guess, the people had some idea in advance that such a thing might happen, that this guy is a dookie and he might cause trouble. So what they actually did, he says, is beforehand, they tied little rocks onto the ends of their astrogim. The Chachamim didn't realize that. The Chachamim would have told them. If they had asked the Chachamim, they would have told them, you know what, the guy's a dookie, okay, he's going to do the wrong thing. Fine, you know, we'll deal with him afterwards. Don't go take the law into your own hands. But like this, the people were, you know, so they prepared themselves in advance with a astrogim, with these little rocks tied to them, and when, sure enough, he poured it on his feet, they actually pelted him with these astrogim plus rocks and actually ended up killing him.
How can you do that on Yom Kippur?
It could have been Chalamayit. Actually, I mean, Mepharshim also point out, I mean, usually, you know, wouldn't it be a bazillion for the mitzvah to take an esrog and toss it at somebody like that? And the answer is, actually, that's okay. This is the covered of the mitzvah that you're using it to punish somebody who did such a terrible thing. Theoretically, well, I don't know, that's the thing. It's questionable whether he'd actually be chayav mitzvah. That's why, according to Ben Yehoyada, not necessarily would the Chachamim have told them to do this. We do find in Sanhedrin, mainly, that if a Kohen does the Avodah wrongly, for example, a Kohen does the Avodah Betrumah, then the other Kohen would go and beat him up, and kill him. Like it wasn't an official thing like that, based in Chayav Mitzvah and based in, but still, like, they take the law into their own hands. So here it could have been the same kind of thing. One other interesting sideline about this, actually, is Josephus tells the story. But he tells it about Yanai HaMelech. Here the Gemara doesn't mention the name of the person. Josephus says that Yanai did this, and everybody stoned him with their astrogim, and he goes on to tell the aftermath of it. But the Yerushalmi is saying that this person who did it ended up getting killed. The way Josephus tells it is Yanai lived up for many years after that. So either we have to say that Josephus is not telling the truth, that, you know, that the attacker did kill him and he didn't want to put that for whatever reason, or it happened more than once.
But in that other version,
in Josephus' version, yeah, he got his guards to kill many Jews over there, yeah.
He did.
Yeah. There's a very famous sicha, I believe it's in Chevet Gimel or Dalet, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning of what happened over here. The gist of it is, Nisuch HaMayim, so we have, again, there's two liquids that are poured on the Mizbeach. There's wine and there's water. Wine has a taste. So therefore, it represents mitzvahs that we do with Tam V'Das, that we understand what we're doing. The Mishpatim, the Eidos, yeah. Water has no taste, so it represents the mitzvahs that we do out of Kabbalah Sol. The Tzedukim didn't believe in that concept of serving the Eidosher with Kabbalah Sol. They felt everything has to be understood with the human brain, and if it's not understandable with the human brain, then it's not worthwhile. So the Tzedukim, therefore, didn't believe in Nisuch HaMayim, and so therefore, when this Tzedukim is there, actually in the position to do it, he says, he pours it on his feet, which on one level, it means he's being mevazeh the mitzvah. But on another level, what he's saying is, you know what? Fine. There is such a thing as mitzvahs with Kabbalah Sol. You know who that's for? That's for the feet of the Jewish people. That's for the people who don't have the seichel, the elites, or whatever. The feet, the ichvahs, you know, the akvayim, fine, they can have avodah with Kabbalah Sol. It's not needed for the higher, more important people like us. So everybody pelted him with their esrogim, because what's the esrog? The esrog is the person who represents the person who has Torah and mitzvahs, the pack of the elite of the Jewish people. They pelted him with the esrogim as if to say, even the esrogim of the Jewish people disagree with you on that. Even the esrogim of the Jewish people understand that you need Kabbalah Sol, that you need Nisuch HaMayim.
That's why you need it most, actually.
Yeah. And the Rebbe also goes on to explain in the Sicha, we'll talk about tomorrow, the Gemara continues the story about whether the Mizbeach was damaged, we'll talk about it a little more tomorrow, Rez Hashem. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, K'maaseo b'chol kach maaseo b'Shabbos, just like they did the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim on weekdays, so also they did it on Shabbos, because he said in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek that they did it for 7 days, so they did it no matter what, even on Shabbos. Ella, Shahayim Amalav Erev Shabbos, except that they had to fill it up Erev Shabbos, because you can't carry it from the Shiloyach to the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. Chavis Shalzahav She'enu Mekudesh, they filled up a golden barrel that was not Mekudesh, that was not a Kli Sharis.
Not a Kli Sharis.
The reason is, well, right now we're assuming, the Gemara will talk about it more on Daf Nun, but right now the assumption is, because if you, in general, when you put anything into a Kli Sharis, anything that's supposed to be in that Kli Sharis, at that point it gets Kedushas HaGuf, which we learned about a great deal in Shkolim. Once something has Kedushas HaGuf, one thing that happens to it is then Lina applies to it. The din that if it's left overnight, or it's beyond the point when it's supposed to be brought as a carbon, then it becomes Pasul. So in this case, if they were to put this water into a barrel that is a Kli Sharis on Erev Shabbos, by the time Shabbos morning comes, it's Pasul. Lina. Therefore, necessarily, they had to put it into a barrel that's not a Kli Sharis. Mina Shiloyach, so they'd fill that up from the Shiloyach. Umanicha Balishka, and then they'd put it in one of the chambers of the Beis Mikdash, and the next day they'd take a jug and fill it up from that and use it. Nishpacha, Nisgalsa, what if...
The next morning they put it in a Kili Kredi.
Yes, but then there's no problem with Lina, right? Right. Nishpacha, what happens if the water spilled overnight? Or nisgalsa, or if it became uncovered, which we know the Gemara mentions in many places, it is a famous thing in many places in Shas, that liquids that are uncovered that are uncovered and unsupervised for a certain length of time become offered to drink out of danger that a snake may have drunk from it and emitted venom into it.
Can you leave it overnight?
So nowadays this whole issue of Mayim Megulim is not really such an issue, if most poets can say, because it's not common for snakes to be. We don't commonly have snakes among us.
Just because of snakes? Or?
Yeah, that's the official reason, is because of snakes. Nevertheless, I know a lot of people who are capable to cover their Negelwasser at night, yeah. Although that might be the more practical matter, so they don't step in it.
What about leaving water in a keli metal?
That's a different matter. That's a different matter. I don't think that has to do specifically with gilui. But anyway, so here where the water became uncovered, then he can't use it for Nisuch HaMayim anymore. Rashi says the reason is not so much because you're not allowed to drink this water, but because, what is it? You're supposed to have a certain shear of water. You have to have 3 logim, or 1 log according to Rabbi Yehuda. If a snake will have drunk from it, and spit out venom into it. Now you have, you don't have a full 3 logim of water. You have 2.9 logim of water and 1.1 log of venom. And that's no good. And Parshim actually talk about then actually, so that indicates, they say, that when we talk about the concept of bittul, when we talk about that something is bottle but rise, doesn't necessarily mean that it, you know, sometimes we think that it means that the thing that's becoming bottle assumes the character of what it's bottled into. Here not, because otherwise we'd say the venom becomes effectively water, la halacha. But the fact is it doesn't. We're only worried about venom, but
Well, the birds could drink at night.
They could, but we're not worried so much about that. So Tosfos says that actually the Gemara will discuss it on Daf Nun at the very end of the Perek. That's the Gemara's initial assumption, is because of what Rashi said. But really, the Gemara ends up explaining that really not. Even if you were to filter the water to get rid of the venom, you still have it, and make sure that it's full 3 logim, you still have the issue that such water wouldn't even be proper to offer to a human king, let alone to the Eivishter. Well, but do as Nisach HaMayim is not necessarily it. So actually, right, some Farshim talk about the idea, in general, we know that things that are used for Karbonos have to be something that is edible by Jewish people. Mimashke Yisrael, we learned in Sachim. So if so, why don't we just say, plain and simple, since the Chachamim said you're not allowed to drink such water because of the danger, then automatically you can't bring it on the Mizbeach. And so therefore, they discuss the issue, maybe not necessarily. When we say that something that's also to eat or drink can't be used as a korban, we mean something that to begin with was also to eat and drink. Tevel, for example, whatever. Here, where originally the water was good and only later it became poison, not necessarily with the issue of mashke Yisrael apply. But you have these other issues that Rashi and Tosfos bring up. Anyway, so either way, if the water spilled or it became uncovered, then what you would do is you'd fill up the jug from the kiyur, which they'd use it to wash the kainim hands and feet. So now in this case, they do that. Because water or wine that was left uncovered is possible to bring on the Mizbeach for all the reasons that we just talked about.
They could take from the
Kiyar. So there's a couple of years that Eber talked about this in Sichos of Simchas Beis Sheva. The deeper idea behind this is normally Nisuch HaMayim, again, which represents the idea of Kabbalah Sol, normally it should be based on that it comes from Mayan, it comes from a spring, meaning that you're connected to your source. You make sure that you're connected to your source, to your Rebbe. What happens if you're not able to? You're in a position where you don't feel able to be connected to your Rebbe. Then at least next best is that you fill, what's the kiyur? The water from the kiyur is like a mini mikveh. Halacha is actually that water that's kosher for the kiyur is also kosher for a mikveh, and vice versa. The water from the kiyur normally just the water from the kiyur just comes, it can be from anywhere basically.
Rainwater also.
So in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, we learned in Yuma what they had is that one of the Kohanim Gedolim Ben Katan, I think it was, built a muchni, a mechanism that would, according to the Rambam, they actually used it as a reservoir to refill the kiyur. According to all the other Mefarshim, it was an underground. It was a pulley to lower the kiyur down underground, so that way the water of it mixes with the water underground. That way, it doesn't become possible by lina. Either way, so whatever the water came from, exactly the point is, for our purposes, we consider it like mikveh water. What does a mikveh represent? Mikveh represents bittul. Tevila oitiyas habittul. So then, pnimiyas enyanim. It means that a person, For the avodah of Nisuch HaMayim, has to be connected to his makor, to his shodesh, like a maya. And if he's not able to, then at least he needs to develop bittul, like a mikveh. How do we know this that we're saying? Now, which thing are we talking about? Rashi says we're talking about how do we know that you're supposed to blow, that they blow the chatzotzvis, tkiya tzurotkiya, when they're bringing in the water. And Tosfa says, how do we know that you have to bring the water from the shaloyach spring? Because the Pasuk says you should draw water with sasin, with joy. So then, either way, according to Rashi, it means that you're blowing the chatzotzvos as an expression of joy when you're drawing the water. And according to Tosfos, we see, because the Pasuk continues, remind me Hayeshua, from the wellsprings of salvation. So we see that it has to be from a wellspring, from a mayan. The Gemara tells a story, Tanu Tshrei Mini, there were these two minim, Pekorsim, Chad Shmei Sosin and Chad Shmei Simcha. One was named Sosin, one was named Simcha. So they once got into an argument. Amalei Sosin was Simcha, not Adifna Minach. So Sosin says to Simcha, I'm better than you. Dichtiv Sosin the Simcha Yasigu again. Where we see the Pasuk put Sosin first. Wait, it sounds like a funny story, but there's more to it than that. Amalei Simcha L'Sasin, Simcha answers back to Sasin, on the contrary. I'm better off than you. Simcha V'Sasin L'Yehudim. We see that there's another pasuk that puts Simcha first. Amalei Sasin L'Simcha, so Sasin says to Simcha, you know what, let me tell you what your future is. Yuchad Yomer, there's going to come a time, Shavkuch, they're going to abandon you, Min HaShemayim, like you're going to lose your high position, the Shavyucha Pravanka, and they're going to make you to be a runner, a messenger. You will go out with simcha. So whenever the yidden go out, they're going to have simcha as the runner running ahead of them to check that everything, to check that the road is clear. Amalei simcha l'sasin. So simcha says back to sasin, you know what? Your future, chad yomer shakuch. One day also you're going to be abandoned min hashemayim. Umolo b'chamaya, and they'll use you. They'll use your skin to fill up water with, or not your skin. They'll use you as a water carrier. You'll draw water with something. So what on earth is going on over here? I mean, it sounds like a very silly story. So some of the Farshim actually say, Marsha says, for example, that yeah, we're talking about these on Minim. They don't have a Torah Shabbat Peh. All they have is Torah Shabbat Sav. So yes, you're going to have Pesukim like that to contradict each other, and that, you know, without a Masorah to explain the Pesukim, yeah, they're going to come up with ridiculous arguments to each other like this. The Rebbe talked about it a couple of times in Sichas, that after all said and done, I mean, it sounds, you know, these two guys are being ridiculous maybe, but after all, it became part of the Torah. It's in the Gemara over here. When we learn this, we still have to make a bracha on the Torah on it. So therefore, it becomes part of Torah Semes. And the truth is, there is a certain degree of truth to it. Sosin and Simcha represent two different levels, two different types of things. One time that I've talked about the idea that explains in a number of places in Chassidus that Sosin is Zah and Simcha is Malchus. So then you have the question, what's greater, Zah or Malchus? Depends how you look at it, right? I mean, in our time, Zah is higher than Malchus. But Nekeva to Slave of Gover, right? In Mashiach's time, Malchus will see that Malchus is higher than Zah.
I always say that going down really has Sosin going by. Jewish
stuff. Okay, I don't know. Could be. Another time that I've explained the idea that Simcha is something more, is more related to things that are chitzoniistic, and Sasan is related more to things that are pnimiistic. So therefore, again, you have it. What? I think I have it right, but maybe I have it backwards. I don't remember. Whatever it was. So then again, you know, you have the idea. What's more important, chitzoniist or pnimiist? Each one has its advantages over the other. So in a way, both of these minim have a point against each other. There's a lot of other interesting explanations. One of them I saw a reference to, although I couldn't find the explanation itself, that they say, I think in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that these two characters here, Sasan and Simcha, represent the Christians versus the Muslims, and their arguments about which one is greater, and, you know, of course the answer is either.
Minim has to be Goyim, or they can be...
No, they can be Yidden, or Arab Korsim, yeah. They're over there. Another story in this connection. Amalei hahu mina d'shmei Sasan l'Rabbo. A min whose name was Sasan once said to Rabbo, "Asidisu d'timlu l'mayim la'ava d'asi." It's your future is going to be that you're going to fill up water for me in the future world, and in the world to come, and in the times of Mashiach. D'chtivu shabta mayim Sasan. It says you're going to draw water with Sasan. So meaning obviously, I Sasan am going to have you draw water for me. Amalei, so Rabbi Bauer tells him, "Iavksiv lissasa in kidekamer." If it said Roshavtemayim lissasa, then you're right. That would mean we'll fill up water for you. Hashidksiv bissasa, but since it says we'll fill up water with sasa, what it means is mashchedahu gavra, the skin of that person, meaning your skin, mashvinin leguda, we will make it into a water skin. Umalinin beMaya, and we'll fill up water with it. So again, Marsha says what we're talking about over here is this min is trying to make fun of the concept of tchias amesim. The min is telling Rabbo, you guys believe in Tchias HaMeisim, you're going to have all the people who died throughout all the years of Golos are going to come back alive again, but you know what, it's just going to be to serve people like me. And Rabbo tells him, on the contrary, someone like you, all that's going to be left of you in Mashiach times is the skin, the chesonius. There's an interesting explanation that the Shem Mishmuel, the son of Avnei Nezer, brings, something along the lines of that he explains it about this previous thing about Simcha and Sasan, and also about this one with Sasan and Rabbo, that these minim were arguing that the ultimate purpose of life and of the reward that a person has in the Olam HaEmes and in the times of Mashiach is pleasure, is joy. So therefore they're arguing Sasan and Simcha are the ultimate. And Rabbanu is telling them in, no. The purpose is, Simcha itself is only a keli for something higher than it. Simcha is a keli to serve the Eivishter with. So yes, we will take you, Sasan, and make you into a keli with which we will draw water to serve Hashem with.
Is it true that from Yisra Shama will come only, some people hold that only will wake up one person from the whole...
No, I've never heard of that. I mean, a neshama can be divided into... I don't know.
I say,
the neshama has to break into pieces. Yeah, so what? Ruchnias is unlike Gashmias. It can be divided, yes. The Mishnah said, that the Kohen would go, the Kohen carrying the water would go up the ramp of the Mizbeach and turn to his left. We learn in a brisa, whenever a kohen would go up to the mizbeach, olim derech yamin, usually they would go up on the right side of the ramp, umakifin v'yodin derech smol, and they'd go all around the mizbeach and then come down the left side. So here's a diagram of the mizbeach. So of the floor plan of the mishmash in general. So normally a person would walk up this side of the ramp. He'd turn to, if he's going up to the top of the mizbeach, let's say, he'd go, or actually the normal case is a person would be going not around the top of the mizbeach per se, but around the soiv, around the ledge, which was 3 amos below the top of the mizbeach. So he'd walk up this side, he'd go all around the ledge, around all four sides, do whatever it was he had to do, for example, the blood of a chatas or whatever it was, and he'd come down the left side. And come down the left side, yeah. The idea is, this way, as he's going around the Mizbeach, walking on the Soviv, he's facing the Mizbeach. The Soviv is a ledge only an armor wide. He's facing the Mizbeach. He's constantly moving to his right, which is how you're supposed to do it. In the Mishnah, we had a number of times in Yoma, that whenever you're turning, you're supposed to be turning to the right. So he starts over here. Right. He goes over here onto the ledge. And now, as he's walking around over here, he's constantly moving to his right. He's going counterclockwise.
Right.
If he were walking straight ahead, then yes, when he comes to a corner, he'd be turning left. But he's not walking straight ahead. He's walking like this. So therefore, he's constantly going to his right.
He's walking laterally.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying. So the whole
like that. All the right is moving like this.
Yes. Because the whole side of it is only an armor wide. So he's walking as he's walking. He's facing right. Them as there the whole time. Yes.
From his right to his left.
No, he's walking from his left to his right. He's constantly moving to the right. Again, here's the ledge of the mizbeach, let's say,
right.
Around a couple sides of it. So he's over here.
Right.
He's walking over here.
He's facing
the mizbeach. His face is towards the mizbeach. So as he's walking laterally, he's constantly walking to his right. He's following his right arm, yeah. So normally they would do that. Except for somebody who's going up to the mizbeach for any of the following three things. They would go up the left side and return directly back the way they came. The Elohim, what are the three things? Nitzach HaMayim, pouring the water. The Nitzach HaYayin, and pouring the wine. The Ola Sa'oif, Kishrav to the Mizrach, and bringing an Ola of birds when there were a lot of them being done on the east side. Normally, the normal place where bird karbanos were brought on the mizbeach was usually on this corner over here, the southeastern corner.
Right.
And the idea behind that was because you want to the place where you have to throw. The pasuk says that after when you bring a korban of a bird, you have to take certain parts of it. You have to take the crop and some of the feathers and so forth, and throw them to the mekayim adoshin, to the place where they put the ashes that they took off the mizbeach every morning. That place is over here. So therefore, normally they do a korban oif on this side, on this corner of the mizbeach, and that way you're fairly close to the makom adoshin. It's only a short throw. When there were a lot of kohenim doing korbanos of birds over there, then this was the overflow place. Then they would do it on this corner.
This corner, right.
Now, and then actually the Gemara points out that the kohenim had a great pitching arm, because in that case they're having to take this crop and feathers and whatever, which is a very lightweight thing, and throw it from here to here, which is a distance of about 30 amos. So they would have made great baseball pitchers. So one other detail that we have to know in order to understand this point is when they brought an ola of birds, they'd have to bring the blood would have to be placed on the top half of the mizbeach. When they were doing a chatas ha'oif, the blood would be on the bottom half of the mizbeach. So therefore, when they're doing a chatas ha'oif, they're doing it at the bottom half of the mizbeach. So therefore, there's no issue; they don't have to go up at all. But when they're doing it on an ola sa'oif, which has to be on the top half of the mizbeach, so necessarily they have to climb up the ramp. And so therefore, these three things...
Because it got consumed, that's why they had to put it on the upper part?
No, the reason because of chatas ha'oif. That's a good point. Chatas ha'oif, none of it was burned on the mizbeach. True, but that's a kosher. Bird korban is the opposite of an animal korban in that regard. An animal chatas, the blood has to be put on the top half of the mizbeach. An animal ola on the bottom half. Birds are the other way around.
Ola on the top,
chatas on the bottom, yeah. So, now, what happens is like this. Normally you have the situation is that a kohen goes up the ramp of the mizbeach, and he goes around the whole mizbeach until he reaches the point that he has to do, and then he comes down. When he's carrying the jug of wine, or water, or bird, the problem is if he walks the whole distance around the mizbeach, it's a long distance, over 100 amos, because the mizbeach is 32 amos on each side, the water or the wine might absorb smoke, and that'll make it possible to bring. And the bird might die from the smoke. Yeah, the bird might die from the smoke. It might suffocate. Yeah. So therefore, in those cases, they just go straight up, go turn directly left to the corner that they need to. They do their thing, and then they come directly back down. We don't make them circle around the whole mizbeach to come back down. But that's what we're saying, therefore. So that's why our Mishnah is saying that the kohen would go up the ramp and turn to his left, even though normally in the Mishnah protocol was always you turn to the right. In this case, if he had to turn to the right, he'd have to go all the way around the mizbeach. The water will get full of smoke, meanwhile, so therefore he just turns left and goes directly there to the two basins. The Mishnah said, Elo Shayu Mashchirin. We had the Machloikas of Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim. The Chachamim had said that the two basins were made out of silver, and Rabbi Huda said they were made out of plaster. They just looked silvery because of the wine. And I said, this is the Yayin Mashchir. I can understand why the one that they poured the wine into looked dark, because the wine discolored it. Demaya Amai Mashchir. Why would the one from the water be dark? The answer is given to Amamar, since we said in the Mishnah, Ir Shamayim Vaserch Shoyayim, Ir Shoyayim Vaserch Shamayim Yatza, that Bidiyevit, if you pour the water into the wine one and vice versa, or according to the Rambam, Bidiyevit, if you mix the water and wine together before you're pouring it, then you're Yatza. Shamayim also Lashkori, so the wine, so the water one also tends to get darkened. Over the years, the water one would also, there'd be enough time that the Kohen would make a mistake and pour it into the wrong one, or pour the two of them together, or whatever, that the water one would also get discolored. The Mishnah said when Ukavim commit base chaytmin chola. The Mishnah had said that the two holes in the two basins, and we said that one hole was wider and one hole was narrower, so they both finish up at the same time. Now, Lema Masnisin, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Rabbanan. Should we say then that our Mishnah is only that part of the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Huda and not the Rabbanan? That's not Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda is saying that they use only one lug of water. As opposed to, it's a given, everybody agrees, because the Pasuk says that they use three lugim of wine.
Right.
So then, the Gemara is assuming, if we're saying that they had to make the hole for the wine wider than the one for the water, why would that be? Mistama, because there's a lot more wine than there is water. So it takes it three times as long to drain out, so therefore we need a much wider hole.
And that's according to
that would only be according to Rabbi Huda. According to the Chachamim, you have three lugim of both. So then you shouldn't need, the holes can be the same size. It would seem.
Theoretically.
According to the Rabbanan, they ought to be able to be the same size. It's the same amount of liquid. The answer is no. I feel the same in Rabbanan. No, you could even say it is according to the Rabbanan. Because chamra samich, wine is thicker. Maya kolish, water is thinner. So therefore, true, you don't need a huge difference in size, but you need a slight difference. In fact, that seems to be logical that this part of the Mishnah is also according to the Chachamim. Because if it was according to the Yehuda, instead of the Mishnah uses the word dak and me'uba, which means thin and thick, instead, according to the Yehuda, you would have to use a different terminology, wide and narrow. Because we find a braisa that Rabbi Huda uses those words. According to Rabbi Huda, where you have to have the wine is not only three times as much as the water, but also thicker, then yes, you had to have a much thinner hole for the wine than you did for a much thicker hole for the water.
Because there was more wine.
Because there was more wine than water, and you wanted to make sure that they both drain out at the same time.
So then the chances that they go get clogged is much bigger for the wine. Narrow than...
No, that's what we're saying. The wine one was the wine one was wider because there's more wine,
right.
And the water one was narrower.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Tanya, we learn a bright. So Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shnei kasvoy tayusham. There were two utensils over there. Kasvoy actually it means utensils. There's a couple of places where the Gemara uses going over to kasva, for example. So there were two utensils there. Echad shomayim veechad shoyayin. The one for water, one for wine. Shoyayin pia rochav. The one for wine had a very wide opening. Shomayim pia kotzer. The one for water had a narrow opening. So we see that he uses the words rochav and kotzer rather than the Mishnah's dak and meuba. In order that they should both drain out at the same time. Shmamina flat proves that, on the contrary, our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would have to use different terminology because it would actually be a major difference in size, as opposed to according to the Chum, it's only a slight difference.